At UFC 82, Heath Herring defeated Czech Congo via split decision, but more importantly, he cemented his place amongst the top contenders in the UFC's heavyweight division. So where does he go from here, and whom would he like to fight next? Here to talk about those plans and more is the Texas Crazy Horse himself, Heath Herring. Welcome to MMA Rated Radio, Heath.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, we've been wanting to talk with you for a long time, and like I said, UFC 82, a very impressive victory over Czech Congo, and one that you sorely needed. Right now, you're 2-2 in the UFC, and the interesting thing is that it almost seems as though, win or lose, after every UFC fight that you've had so far, you seem to have been a little bit disappointed in your performance. How would you rate thus far your tenure in the UFC?
I'd say it's been mostly probably a learning experience, you know, to try to adapt to the new rules and the new format, which for me has kind of been a problem, I think, you know, coming over from Pride and in Japan. So I would say that the last year was a learning, a big learning curve for me.
You mentioned that, you know, Czech Congo, he's this guy who everyone knew that he had trouble, you know, on the ground. Everyone knows about his striking abilities, and you seemed a little surprised that he wanted to go to the ground with you. In hindsight now, do you think that maybe that was a good decision on his part to try to trick you? Or, you know, if you were him going into a bout against a guy with such a resume as yourself, you thought he would have wanted to try to stand and bang with you?
You know, I mean, that's a real hard question to answer, just because we don't really know what his game plan was going into that fight. A lot of people say, you know, after he got caught with that first straight ride at the beginning of the fight, that maybe that shook him up and he decided to try to take the fight to the ground. But, you know, he would be the one to better answer that question than me, to be honest with you.
You hear so much about his strength. I mean, he looks impressive. His build is, mm-hmm. you know, he looks like some sort of, you know, machine-operated fighter just because how cut he is. How strong was he in comparison to some of the other great fighters and heavyweights that you faced in your career?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't notice anything different. I mean, obviously he wasn't able to hold me down. It didn't seem like that strength played a big factor in that fight. So, you know, I fought some of the biggest and strongest, you know, on the planet. And I can't really say that there was anything noticeable or different with him.
This was a guy who had just come off a victory over Mirko Krokop. Obviously, that was a huge upset. You know, despite the fact that Mirko's coming off that Gabriel Gonzaga loss, a lot of people weren't picking Congo. And all of a sudden, he vaults up the, you know, fictitious MMA rankings out there that we love to talk about. Now you defeat him. You look at Congo's resume. He's fought a couple of great guys, but no one to, you know, hasn't been in the ring or cage with the likes of fighters that you've been in with. After this victory, do you think that this is sort of a feather in your cap, you know, because Congo had just defeated Krokop, or, you know, are you looking, for lack of a better term, bigger and better opponents coming on, you know, in the future?
Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend that, you know, Congo was the biggest win of my life by any means, and that's something that I really haven't tried to do or play up, you know. I think first and foremost, you know, going back to the previous question, that was kind of what we wanted to do by coming out and fighting with them in a stand-up capacity. You know, we wanted to come out there and show the, you know, show everybody or put the other people in the heavyweight division on notice that, you know, that we're more than capable of defeating the quote-unquote best striker in the division at his own game. So that's really what I wanted to do by going out with Congo, was go out there, fight a guy that everybody was scared to death to stand with, and beat him at that game.
How important was it for you to have a good showing? And I'm sure you would have liked to finish him and not have this bout go to the judges. But after that Minotauro loss, where everyone was expecting you to win after you rocked him, you had him down on the ground, and you know, now you're coming into your fourth fight, you're 1-2, and you're facing this guy who just beat Mirko Krokop.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, like I said, like I was talking about earlier, I mean, that was what we wanted to do, go out and beat the stand-up monster at his own game. You know, and I was really, really disappointed, of course, with it going to the decision. You know, we were trying to finish the fight standing up. You know, I'm a fan fighter. I like to go out there and put on fights that the fans like to watch and enjoy. I'm not the kind of guy that likes to lay on the ground and not do a whole lot of things and a lot of action. If I am on the ground, I am trying to finish the fight, you know, in every way possible. I hate for fights to go to the judges, because then that takes all the control out of the fight out of my hands, and it puts it in somebody else's hands, and you just don't know what they're going to decide to do at that moment. So, yeah, I mean, that's where a lot of that disappointment comes from for me, is that I like to go out and finish fights and give the fans what they want to see.
You look at your four fights in the UFC, all of them have gone to the judges' scorecard, and prior to that, your last one that went the full three rounds was 2004, and you really look at the beginning of your career. I mean, none of your fights even went past the first round.
Right.
You must be pretty antsy at this point to really show the UFC audience what you're made of, because you have to think that at this point you haven't really been able to show the full arsenal.
Well, I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that, you know, I'm stuck with the rules in the UFC the way they are, and unfortunately I'm just not able to you know, use the knees and you know, for me, the knees was a really big weapon. You know, it was kind of an in-game type thing. You know, once I could get those knees in on somebody, fight was pretty much over. And had we had use of the knees to the head here in the UFC, I think that fight would have been over in the first or in the second round.
All right. So go ahead.
Anyway, and that's something that we've had to, or I've had to learn and adapt to.
Have you had any discussions since that fight? I know it was just a couple of weeks ago, but where do you go from here? Is there anyone that they're talking to about who they'd like you to fight next?
No, I mean, no discussions as far as future opponents or anything like that. You know, I think, you know, with the departure of Tim Sylvia from the heavyweight division, I think that was actually a fight that a lot of people were kind of looking forward to or looking towards, but. Now, you know, like I said, with the departure of Sylvia, I think a lot of people are kind of trying to figure out what they're going to do with me, or what the UFC, I think, is even trying to figure out what to do with me. I think right now, you know, just another fight with Nogueira just really isn't in the cards this soon. You know, I can definitely see a fight with Nogueira coming along pretty quickly, but I think I need to get a couple more wins under my belt, you know, especially with us just having fought in July.
Let's say Nogueira holds that title for 2 years or so, and you go on an impressive winning streak now. Do you think that they will really give you a fourth shot at him, considering the fact that you lost those previous three bouts? I know all of them weren't in the UFC, but still, you know, the resume, you know, clearly states.
Well, I don't know why they wouldn't. I mean, I think if that's what the fans, I mean, let's remember, I mean, this sport is first and foremost, you know, entertainment. I mean, if fans want to watch Nogueira and Herring 4, I think that they're going to give it to him. You know, and as far as, you know, the way the scorecard is set right now, I think you have a lot of argument as to, you know, this had happened differently or that had happened differently. I think that fight could have been mine pretty easily back in July. You know, disregarding just even that first round knockout, had I come in better shape, you know, and even going so far as to say, had I been in the condition that I was in for this last fight, I think we could have even won the second and third round and won the fight on a decision. But unfortunately, that's not the way it went. So we've got to go back and just prove our worth, I guess, so to speak, to the fans and to the UFC, and try to get in that way.
Can you take me back to that fight, and specifically that knockout, because that's the one everyone talked about. That's what they really focused on in the lead-up to UFC 82. What was going through your mind, and why didn't you try to go in for the finish?
Well, I mean, I did go in for the finish there for a second, I mean, if you remember correctly. But what happened is I started feeling Nogueira start coming back and start trying to grab me. You know, and that's something that I know Antonio does very, very well. He plays possum really well, and he likes, you know, to get guys on top of him. I think we saw that with the Tim Sylvia fight. You know, Tim Sylvia got him rocked and hurt him. But, you know, and Antonio was just did a really good job of taking a shot, getting down to the ground, and then affecting him there adversely thereafter. So, you know, that's something that I was thinking about, and I kind of started feeling him come back, and I thought, you know, I'd stand up real quick and try to finish him off standing. But unfortunately, I had some miscommunication in my corner, and I wasn't aware of the time.
Oh.
And I paid the price.
At that moment, was there a thought in your mind that said maybe the ref will stop, you know, we'll jump in and stop this bout right after the knockout, and you'd even have to go, you know, try to finish?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I I've said this in several interviews before, and you know, I actually saw his eyes roll into the back of his head. It was like slot machine. And, you know, that's why I kind of hesitated there for a second. But unfortunately, Yves Levine, his viewpoint was over Nogueira's shoulder, and mine, of course, was directly into his eyes. So I got a little bit of a different viewpoint than the referee did at that time. And, you know, that's just something that happens, unfortunately. You know, you don't, you know, it's a sport, and things occur and things happen, and sometimes you make a mistake in the eye of the moment, and you can't go back and take it back.
All right, so putting Nogueira aside, is there one guy out there that you think if you get in the cage with and defeat will really propel you and give you that strong argument to face him for the fourth time?
Well, I mean, no, exactly. I mean, I don't know. The heavyweight division right now in the UFC is very, very fickle. I mean, I don't know where everybody stands. I don't know what's going on with the UFC. I don't know what next fight would catapult me up there to get another title shot. I think, unarguably, I'm pretty much the number one heavyweight title contender right now. I don't think you're going to find anybody that's going to really argue that point. The problem is you know, like I said earlier, me and Nogueira just fought back in July. So I don't know what they're going to do and what fight is really, really smart for the UFC right now.
How many fights do you have left on that UFC contract?
On my current contract, I have one fight left, actually.
Really? So is this a situation where you will try to re-sign with them before that next fight, or are you going to?
Yeah, I mean, we're actually in the discussions. You know, the UFC has talked to me a little bit about re-signing the contract right now. So, you know, we'll see what happens. That's up to my manager and my management team. I mean, that's what I pay them for. So, you know, we'll see what happens on that.
I try
to concentrate on fighting and training.
Are you happy, though, with the way they've treated you thus far with these four bouts under your belt?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm a company guy. I mean, I never speak out against any organization. I mean, I've had, you know, even in Japan when I had problems with the K-1, you know, after the whole New Year's Eve kiss thing, I really didn't come out and have anything negative to say. So, you know, and I still don't. I don't have anything negative against the UFC to say at all. I mean, the organization is an organization, and they're trying to take care of themselves the best they can. And, you know, it's just the way it goes sometimes. Not everybody's going to be happy at all times.
It's interesting because it sort of sounds like you are biting your tongue right now. Am I correct in that?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
No, not at all.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
That's what I was just saying, because I know there's a lot of fighters that really come out and speak out against them, especially as of late.
Right.
And, you know, I think what's happening right now is, especially with the sport getting so big, I think a lot of people are really maybe starting to complain about the differences and, you know, the amount of money the organization is making as opposed to the amount of money that they're giving out to the athletes and things like that. And I'm just one of those guys that's, you know, I'm pretty happy with what's going on in my life, and I'm not going to come out and talk bad about my employer, I guess, publicly. I guess that's the point I was trying to make.
I guess it's the line of thinking that you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And the other thing is, too, you know, when you sign a contract with somebody, you know, you've agreed to that. And I don't really understand the whole point of these guys coming out after they have these contracts signed and then wanting to renege on it and change things in mid-stride. I really don't understand that. I mean, if you're not happy with the way things are, don't sign it to begin with. You know, get it ironed out beforehand.
Interesting you mentioned that, because if you look at the Randy Couture situation, I've always said that for this one, you know, the UFC might be doing a lot of things that fighters might not like behind the scenes, but where I'm sitting, it seems as though Randy signed a contract and sort of trying to renege on that now. He might not like the way things are planned out, but you put your name on that
right
line, you got to honor it, right?
Right, that's kind of the point I'm trying to make right now, is that, you know, I know the UFC's kind of been getting a bad rap with a lot of people, but, you know, once you sign that contract, you know, get it over and done with, and then, you know, when negotiations come up, then's your time to try and air your grievances at that point, but not in mid-stride.
This is a pretty solid time to be a free agent in the world of mixed martial arts, with Elite XC starting to gain some momentum, especially in the United States. You have Dreams starting up over in Japan, World Victory Road. We'll see what happens with them. Is there a thought in the back of your mind that you kind of want to test the waters, or are you happy with the UFC?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely a fighter that's traveled and fought all over the world and had that experience. You know, I've got a big following in Asia. So I mean, I'm definitely somebody that, you know, I've got no problem spreading my wings and going overseas if that's if that's the place that I need to go.
You mentioned that following in Asia, and you also earlier mentioned the infamous New Year's Eve kiss against Yoshihiro Nakao. I mean, first off, when you made your UFC debut, you had to have seen all the promos on Spike of them showing that clip.
Oh, sure.
Sort of building you up. Were you happy about that, or is this something that you're trying to forget?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, and like, you know, going back to what I said earlier, I mean, this is entertainment. I mean, I understand it's a sport, and for those of us that are deep rooted in the old tradition, you know, we like the purity of the sport and things like that. But for the mass public, I mean, this is entertainment. They want to sit down. They want to enjoy what they're watching. And so, you know, if that's something that gets the crowd excited and gets people to you know, sit down in front of the TV and watch, then I'm more than happy to allow them to manipulate that or use that.
So for those that don't know, and I'd be shocked if there were anyone listening to this that didn't know about it, can you take me through everything that led up to that? I mean, you guys are put together, you're having the stare down, it's New Year's Eve, it's 2005, and then what happens and what goes through your mind?
You know, that's a question I get asked a lot, and to be honest with you, I don't really remember anything going through my mind. To be honest with you, I remember, like I was talking about earlier with Nogueira, you know, the only other time I've ever seen anybody's eyes roll up in the back of their head, well, that was the very first time. You know, I remember seeing him fly backwards, and his eyes were, you know, going back in the back of his head, and I thought, oh, man, this one's over. And then I kind of realized at that point, wow, I guess I hit him pretty hard, and I hadn't. It was more of a reaction thing. It wasn't something that I'd planned to do at all. And to be honest with you, you know, everybody can say what they would do in that situation, but you know, you have a guy, you know, you have to remember you're getting warmed up for a fight. You're walking out there for a fight. The only thing that's in your mind is hitting the guy, and then of course he steps across the line pre-bell, and you know, you react accordingly, and that's. That, I guess that was my natural inclination in that situation.
Did his lips actually touch yours?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it appears so on the video. It's
right.
Not exactly something that I really think about or obsess about.
No, well, that would be the moment that it would. If someone blows the kiss, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to kick this guy's ass. But if the lips actually touch mine, I think that would set me off and probably do something worse than you did. That said, though, have you ever seen a cow since that whole incident?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so no interest in sort of patching this whole deal up with him?
I mean, I don't know. There's interest in patching what up. There's nothing, I know, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing to patch up. I think I took care of business at the time. And
it'd be a pretty interesting rematch, though. I mean, you have that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if any organization wants to put it together, I would have absolutely no problem taking that fight.
Okay.
I took the fight to begin with, so I wouldn't. Why would I back out of it a second time? It doesn't make any sense.
Behind the scenes, I know they K1 had first, you know, said that the loss was yours, and then they changed it to a no contest. Was there anything crazy that went behind of people like threatening you and all that crazy stuff that goes down in Japan, or was it did everyone pretty much understand why you did it?
You know, like I said, I just I'm not really supposed to talk about it and things that occurred afterwards. So. You know, everything's been, the situation's rectified, and I think everybody's happy with how things have turned out, so we'll leave it at that.
All right, great, Heath. One last question before I let you go. Brandon Vera, Fabricio Werdum, they're the ones who are going to be fighting next, and it appears as though the winner of that bout will get a shot at the number one contendership. What are your thoughts on the fight, and what do you, more importantly, think about those two guys being handed that spot as number one contender?
I don't know. I don't really have any personal feeling as far as that goes. I thought actually after Verdun had defeated Gonzaga that he was going to get an immediate title shot. So I don't know. I think like just goes back to what we were discussing earlier. I think the UFC really just is kind of, they don't really know what to do with the heavyweight division right now. I think they're kind of in a position where they're trying to figure out what to do and what fight makes sense.
All right, Heath. Well, great talking to you, my man. It's been several weeks we were trying to set this up, but really enjoyed
it. Yeah, exactly. I really apologize on that as well. I'm just really...
No.
Things been really hectic lately, so that's the best I can put it.
Totally understandable, and whenever you do fight next, definitely let us know when and where that will be, and we look forward to seeing you back in the octagon sooner rather than later.
For sure. I appreciate it. Thank you.